You're tuned in into the official Dear Fathers podcast hosted by me, Matthew Kirby. If you didn't know, Dear Fathers is a premier media platform dedicated to telling stories of Black fatherhood from all angles. We ignite the power of fatherhood and culture through a conversation about real fatherhood experiences. Now let's get to the show.
Hey everybody, what's up? And welcome to another week, another episode, another conversation on the Dear Fathers podcast. This is your host, you know how I do it, me, Matthew Kirby. And today, and I know I say this every week, y'all, but I really be meaning it for real, deep down in my heart. But we do have another dope and another awesome dad that we're going to be talking to, going to be getting into, you know, life outside of being a father for this particular host, life being inside of a father, and life just everything in between. So I'm really excited to have this conversation, and I'm not going to delay you any longer. So let's get to it. So please, before we get to the meat and potatoes, welcome author, entrepreneur, veteran, and super dope father, Rob Hill Sr., to the Dear Fathers podcast. Hey, what's up, Rob? How you doing, man? How you feeling?
Hey, Matthew, thank you for having me on the Dear Fathers podcast. I appreciate it. I'm feeling good, man. I am feeling good.
Jesse, what's up, man? How you feeling?
I'm doing good today, man. I'm doing great. Like, these conversations, I'm always looking forward to them. I'm especially looking forward to the one today with Rob. Man, he's super dope as far as, like, the inspiration that he puts out on Instagram and everything that he does. Man, I can't tell you how many times that I see so many people, like, sharing his quotes and his posts. So, like, just to dive a little bit deeper, you know, with him, you know, about who he is as a father and getting a little background on all of that, I'm really excited about the conversation today.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I share all of that for sure. And just speaking of quotes, like, Rob, like, I know we're going to get into a lot of stuff, but, you know, one of the quotes for you that stood out to me, and it makes so much sense, and I think about how it's played out in my life, but you quote, and I'm paraphrasing the quote because, you know, I just be putting spin on things, but, you know, one of the quotes said something to the effect of, you know, we're all essentially one decision away from changing our lives or having an impact or a change in our lives. And I think about that and it's like, man, like I remember thinking about that decision wise. I remember, you know, I was making decisions before I became a father, before I got married, before I decided to have another kid and all of that. So, you know, just thinking about those life decision changes and just overall change, you know, appreciate those quotes, man. You got essentially hundreds of them out there for sure. And that was just one that stuck out to me. So do you have you ever have a favorite quote of what you say?
It's funny that you started off with that one because it's actually, to me, just a foundational quote for me and kind of my messaging and my writing. The paraphrase was just on point because you grabbed the true essence of the quote. But it says, we are all one choice away from a completely different life. In saying that, you know, I think I'm, like you, I'm often reminded of the different moments and experiences that I felt like were not forks in a road, but just important times where I needed to make a choice. Whether it was to leave some habits behind, whether it was to shed some environments, or whether it was, you know, opening up to some new people and some new ways of thinking, you know, choices have always just been, you know, just been a very, very, very magnified thing in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like whoever's listening out there, you know, whether you're a parent or not, you know, these choices, these decisions that we make, it ends up telling a big story at the end, but, you know, some of these choices can be life-changing. So before we kind of get into more about what you do, tell us what's up. How's life? How's fighting the Rona? You know, how's isolation? You know, what's going on over there in your side of the world?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was saying, I'm having you know, trouble describing this period as fun for me, but I am somebody who embraces change. I am thankful that my family is healthy and that we have not been impacted, you know, tragically, but I do, you know, send thoughts and prayers out to all those who have been affected, because I understand that it is a very trying, unprecedented time. I've been able to adjust, thankfully, to the type of the career I have, to homeschooling my son on a daily basis, to still kind of stealing time away to writing and, you know, just trying to work out in the garage, vice, you know, going to the gym and, you know, it's learning some new recipes. It's been a time of just embracing the new. And then I tried to add some crafts in there too, like candle making and paint pours, which is just adding a few colors together and kind of letting it fall on the canvas as it may. You know, I just like the unpredictability of it all. But yeah, I've just been using this time to try to stay productive, but bigger than that, you know, to stay feeling well, right? To stay feeling like I have some peace and some joy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's half the battle. Like, I'm so glad you said that. I was just telling somebody earlier today, like, the only folks who are winning during these crazy times, I feel like, are introverts and vegans. And it's one of those things where, and I'll add in the third group of people, it's one of those things where, you know, if you open the change, sure, that'll be helpful. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, we have folks out there struggling, and you know, just through conversations like this, everything video wise, in terms of like Zoom and all of that, you know, I'm just hoping that collectively we're all just trying to pull through this thing together. So I'm glad you're doing good. Glad you're doing well. Jesse, what's going on over there? I heard Texas is back open for business. I'm waiting for that second wave to happen personally. So I'm just eating my popcorn from a distance from California. Yeah. So how's Texas looking?
Yeah, man, they're not going to catch me out there, man. I'm gonna let them test it out first, kind of see how everything go, and then, you know, maybe that second wave I'll get out there. But me, man, I'm just staying busy, you know, kind of like Rob said, honestly, just finding ways to stay productive, staying creative, and just staying well. You know, I talked about before, like, I've got to a point where I'm not putting too much pressure on myself to, like, you know, come out of this, like, with some whole new business or how, you know, like all that stuff that like people are saying. I'm just making sure that I'm taking it one day at a time, and you know, certain days I feel like, you know, being creative and putting out, you know, different things, I'll do that. Some days I feel like just kind of chilling, I'll do that. Earlier today I went for a nice walk around the complex to kind of just enjoy the weather. But and then also, like you said, Matthew, like, introverts are winning right now. I'm an introvert at heart, so like when I see people freaking out about, like, oh, I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything, like, for me, it's like, well, okay, this has been my normal life, so I'm not really, like,
right. I'm like, cool, but, appreciate it.
I am ready for things to be back to, you know, somewhat normal. I know they're not going to be all the way there, but, you know, I'm ready, you know, to go out, and this is one post, it's like, I can't wait to a waiter or waitress ask, like, you know, do you want appetizers and a drink? Like, you know, I am ready for that time where I can just go out to a restaurant and, you know, sit on the patio and enjoy, you know, the weather. Yeah. Other than that, man, I'm chilling, man. I'm taking it easy.
Hey, I hear you on that. And, you know, it just makes me think about sports, Jesse. I know you're big into sports, but, you know, a word on the street, I heard baseball trying to figure out how to come back. And then even this month, NASCAR is coming back as well, so you know, at least the sports world is trying to bounce back and give us some entertainment. You know, I just don't want to see a scene where, you know, basketball, football, all of that come out, you know, corona spread on the team got to drop out the season all of a sudden. So it's pretty tricky. But you know, before we make this whole thing about COVID, Rob, I want to talk about, you know, one of your latest books out. You know, you have a book that's called Hope for Love, and I believe you released that earlier this year. So I just want you to talk to us about, you know, not only the book and your inspiration behind it, but how have you seen people receiving the content in it so far?
So Hope for Love, it was released January 20th of this year, and it is my sixth print book release, but it serves as my first poetry collection. I have been so impressed with the reception. I think that people were kind of waiting for, you know, a full poetry collection. I previewed some in my book About Something Real, my book The Missing Piece, and a couple audio projects previously. But people have, you know, so my intention with it was that we kind of reach these points in life where it may be, you know, a breakup, it may be a loss, but we reach these points of grief, and we may be uncertain of how to grieve and how to repair our wounds and find the healing that we need. But Hope for Love, to me, is just a poetic journey of not having any hope, actually being adverse to love, and then ending with the potentiality of your forever, as you define it, and not by anybody else's terms.
Gotcha. No, I love it. And it's one of those things where, like, just kind of looking at your book and just looking at how, you know, you wrote it and how you expressed yourself, you know, I kind of feel like, and maybe this is just me, but, you know, we don't really see as, you know, either many poems or just a lot of poetry in books nowadays. You know, nothing wrong with, like, self-help and entertainment and all that, but just to really kind of tap into, you know, the true kind of artistry, in my opinion, about making poems and just being able to convey your thoughts and feelings in that. So, you know, shout out to you and the book for sure. I think it was a treat. And to that point, you know, I heard, and maybe you're going to comment on this in a little bit, but, you know, I heard you go by a self-help person, a self-help catalyst, as it relates to you being an author and really just helping out others who not only read your books, but also through some of the other things in your career. What's been your favorite moment in your career so far?
I would say I released my fifth book, The Missing Piece, and my son was at the book signing, and he asked me, how did it feel? And it was a beautiful moment during the Q&A because I was really surprised that he stood up and asked a question. But my answer was that, you know, it feels like I have something else for us. It feels like I'm one step closer to those generational blessings that I always wanted to grow up with. And, you know, he just smiled at me. He said he's proud of me. But that was one of, you know, the biggest moments for me personally. Beyond that, you know, on a speaking platform, I was able to travel to South Africa and take my mom out there for her first time, speak in front of a couple hundred people, and to be a trending topic, you know, in the nation, and just things that I did not imagine as a young person growing up. And then I'd probably say that the third thing is something that I realized probably last year is that I sold books in over 50 countries, and whether I'm classified, you know, just an author or a self-help person or whatever else, you know, whatever title comforts the person, I'm just finding great gratitude and thankfulness that the messages are traveling for a good reason and not for gimmicks and not for, you know, trying to exploit anything. You know, I'm thankful that honest word of mouth and true purpose, you know, are resonating with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, now, Rob, you got to tell me a little bit about this, but I heard you was kind of a superhero and that you're a veteran. So, you know, just thinking about a lot of the camaraderie and, you know, all of those kind of things that it takes to not only, you know, take the best care of yourself as possible, but for others, do you feel like, you know, any aspect or any part of you and your military career and service kind of helped transition or motivated you into some of the work that you've done?
Without a question. I actually have some family roots military-wise. My grandfather served in the Navy. He was a chief. And then my father, my stepfather, Frank, he was an officer in the Army. And, you know, I grew up, you know, traveling with him and my mom and my sisters amongst other military bases.
throughout Germany, California, North Carolina, New Jersey, Virginia, and I went to many schools. But my service, it really taught me the essence of leadership, you know, from my early moments at boot camp, trying to get our group of, you know, 80 guys on the same page, to being honored as a honor recruit, 9 people out of 900, you know, at my graduation. And then just throughout my career, just different moments, whether it be deployments, we're gone 8 months, 7 months. And, you know, the goal is to remain mission ready. And in order to do that, I may have to work out at 4 a.m. so I can be able to, you know, be at my station at 6 and then carry out the next 12, 13, 14 hours at peak shape. You know, so when do you write? When do you phone home? When do you do these things to take care of yourself? And a lot of guys, what I found is that they thought I was a little easy to talk to, you know, and if they didn't, they thought I would understand. Though I did, you know, promote well, I'm not somebody who tries to lead rank first. I'm not somebody who tries to lead resume first or accomplishment first. I don't care. If this is your first day ever meeting me, I would like to leave you with the real piece of it. And I think that throughout my time serving, you know, it really, you know, helped me become what my division chief would call a leader of men. And I think that, you know, it really just made me be a compassionate leader. Because in order to remain mission ready, you really got to care about somebody's overall wellness. You know, you can't just care about how they show up to work. You know, you got to respect the fact that they may have a family breakdown and they may have some, you know, emotional triggers, whatever it is. You know, it's kind of like we're seeing in The Last Dance with Phil Jackson. You know, he was somebody who was able to be emotionally intelligent and use that to get the best out of people. And that's something that I take pride in doing.
Yeah, man, I agree with that 100%. As far as emotional intelligence and just using that in order to, you know, deal with people, different personalities and all of that good stuff. It's been great, everything that you've been saying so far as far as, like, you know, what you learned from being a veteran, and then also just sharing moments as far as, you know, the favorite things that have happened in your career so far. And then the first thing you said was, you know, just having your son with you at the big book signing for your 5th release and him just saying, like, he's proud of you. Like, I know that has to be just something that just hits home for you anytime that you think about it, that you're making him proud and you kind of leaving a legacy for that name and for your son. That's super dope. So even just transitioning into that, like, who is Rob, like, as a father? Who, if you had to describe yourself, or if your son had to describe you as a father, what would that look like? What would he say, and how would you describe yourself?
I guess if I was trying to describe it from his lens, you know, I would hope the first thing he would say is, my dad's honest. He keeps it real with me. He's not scared of the conversation. He's not a because I told you so type person. My dad is supportive. He believes in me. He's not going to wait, you know, to believe in me either. He is active, you know. I see him working out. I see him reading. I see him writing. I see him rebounding for me, you know. And then I would also hope that he said my dad's loving. You know, I would hope that some thoughtful moments came to mind where maybe it was a cool surprise or maybe it was a fun birthday trip or maybe it was just, you know, letting him sleep in, knowing that he stayed up, you know, talking to some friends, playing the game. Just respecting his natural environment and providing a safe space. And lastly, like I said, I will hope he said, my dad makes me feel safe, you know. I know he got me. That's what kind of father I am.
I like it, and I appreciate it. And it's, for me, especially just being a father as well, it's kind of tricky describing yourself as a father sometimes. Like, you know, I try to tell people who aren't parents yet, you know, there's, as you get a family or you get married or whatever happens to you in life, you know, it's so many more layers of you. And it's like, okay, yes, it's me as a father. me as a husband, me as, you know, just me as an individual. So there's so many me's that make sense. And I feel like with all of the layers that we have as people, you know, that we have to love them all. And we have to really get that sense of wholeness and fulfillment. Yes, we get different aspects of joy and everything in our lives, but just being that you are an advocate of that kind of self-love, how important do you feel it is to really make sure that you're teaching it to your kid, and especially at an early enough age so that they can get it and that they can begin to feel like, you know what, I like some of me too. You know, I want to work on some things and just be better, maybe not get on dad nerves as much or anything like that. But, you know, I generally love me some of me. Because we know kids, you know, just growing up, it can be so easy for them to feel down on themselves or get picked on or whatever the case may be. So, you know, how do we create that sense of self-love?
The best part about this journey is that I started when I was 20. I'm 32 now, and he's 12. He just turned 12 in January. And, you know, I tell him all the time, it's like, I wasn't ready, but I didn't let that hold me back. I knew how to get ready and what things to do to prepare myself. Now, I'm never going to be a perfect father, but I promise you, I will always be a quick learner. And that's my guarantee to him. So in the sense where it's like teaching them lessons and teaching them how to kind of just be balanced in life, I think we were talking a few months ago, and I just heard him call him using the phrase, like, I ain't scared of nothing, you know. And then I didn't say anything that day, and then a couple of days later we were doing something, and then I kind of revisited the conversation, and my angle was, you know, have you ever heard me say that? I was like, have you ever heard yourself say you, like, you're scared of anything? He's like, no, I ain't scared of nothing. I was like, have you ever heard me say it? You know, I have some fears or I'm scared of something. And he thought about it for a minute. And I was like, he looked at me like a little side eye. I'm like, it's not a trick question. I was like, the truth is I'm scared of many things. Uncle Daryl, my uncle, he's married to an aunt of mine. He was explaining how even though his son turns 20, he still gets a little bit nervous when he leaves. And he still kind of just, you know, it's a feeling that he gets at night, you know, just from knowing how big the world is and how fast things can happen. So it's fast back to me and my son. And I was telling him, like, I have some nerves about, you know, you growing into teenage and puberty and the emotional times when they come in. You know, I have some fear about my ability to stay balanced and provide the rest environment for you. Now, these fears, these are things that stop me from trying to be good to you. I've learned to channel these fears as moments for me to meet the challenge and overcome. You know, it's not that I'm not scared of anything. It's just that I am willing to face whatever is in front of me in order to get on the other side. The other side may be peace. It may be joy. It may be accomplishment. It may be getting my son into a better school environment than I wanted before. You know, whatever it is, the cost, you know, it's not about not being scared of anything. It's about being willing to face what's in front of you. So just trying to teach him these lessons and have these conversations and then expose my own vulnerability. I never want to be the dad who's pretending to know everything. I want to be the dad who's comfortable with his I don't know, but also I want to be the dad who's always willing to figure it out. You know, that was one of the lessons that I learned from the Navy. It's never, if you got it, I don't know, it better be, but I can figure it out afterwards. And if not, just bring a solution, you know? So I try to live that and show them that. And then I try to just own my mistakes. Hey, I forgot there, but I'm remembering now, but set a reminder for myself, you know, hey, I maybe missed that, but I'm back up, you know, I'm back on it now. And this is what I'm doing to try to change, you know, so that doesn't happen again. And really, that's it, you know.
Yeah, man. All of that is good, man. It shows just a level of, like you said, just being honest with him, you know, letting him know, like, you know, you may not be perfect and things may happen, but you're always there for him and working to, you know, make those adjustments if need be, which is super commendable, man. As you as a father, you've been doing it for 12 years since you say you were 20, right, when you first had him?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 20.
Just thinking about it, like, you know, how important was it for you to, you know, you're Rob Hill Senior. So how important was it for you to, you know, kind of have your son carry on that same name as you? Was that something that you kind of played around with, or did you already know when you had a kid, you know, that you wanted to, you know, kind of give him your name, or, you know, how important was that for you?
I probably knew since I was like seven or
oh,
eight.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm like, yeah, but then I really knew, like, once my mom got married, my dad, he is the third, and then his son's the fourth. But I started thinking I wanted my own Junior. Ken Griffey Jr. was real popular. Martin Luther King Jr. was mad popular. I'm thinking, yeah, like, if I get a Junior, it's a pretty chance he gonna be somebody in this world, you know? I didn't have the best relationship with my biological father, but I did love him. And I did respect some aspects of him, but I knew I wanted a more tangible relationship for myself getting older. I probably became more conscious of it because one of my best friends, his relationship with his father probably, they mirrored, you know, he didn't really hear from him as much or see him as much. And we were both kind of make fun of those little child support commercials that may come on the radio, like, we don't call and, you know, say, but, you know, blah, 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 tell my dad to come see me or whatever. But I think that, you know, just to kind of circle back around, it's just, legacy is important, and being able to give somebody a leg up in this world is a gift. And I think that names carry characteristics. And I knew the work I was going to be putting in for my name. And yeah, I was proud to share that with somebody in the hopes that it's just a little bit easier for them when they write it down.
Yeah, no, I got to agree with you. Like, I was talking to Jesse about this before we, you know, before we got on with the show today. And I was like, when he brought that up, I was like, damn, I didn't even think about that. And what I'm talking about is, and I don't mention this as much, but as far as like me and the men in our family, you know, we kind of are a legacy as well. So my grandfather on my dad's side didn't get a chance to meet him, but he was the original Matthew Kirby. And then my father, who I just met, I've said this before, probably about a year ago for the first time, you know, he's Junior technically. And then me, I'm a third technically, even though that's not, the number itself isn't in my name. And then now that I think about what I've named my son, also Matthew Kirby, I put the number in his name, so he's number four. And I think just thinking about that kind of legacy, like you mentioned, Rob, is so important. And I feel like, to your point with those examples that you gave earlier, I was like, you know what? I'm a little something-something, but Matt, my little man, Matt, he's going to be a big something-something. And I feel like just having that namesake, I don't know, it legacy, at least to me, it matters. And, you know, not to say, you know, every dad that's got a son, we need to copy and paste everybody's names. But, you know, sometimes it does make sense. So I think that was a pretty cool point, pretty cool parallel that I wasn't even thinking about.
Nah, thank you. And then to that point, like my dad, my biological father, he doesn't know his real dad's name. And my grandfather, my mom's dad, he doesn't know his real dad's name. You know, so I just kind of started life with like that. So when I met my stepdad, he was like, whoa, that exists out there? Like, you know, yeah, it was just a different thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, just kind of thinking about those, at least along the lines, and it sounds like this is true for you. I know for me it is, with just like my father, and unfortunately I'd never met my grandfather before he passed, but it kind of brings me back to one of your previous books that you have, The Missing Piece. And you kind of touched on some of the damage that was in your relationship with your father. And for those who aren't as familiar with the book and everything, can you tell us more about not only the book itself, but also kind of that relationship that you have with your father?
So The Missing Piece, it is a book that covers about 17 to about 28, those years of my life, so about a 10-year span. And I go from getting kicked out the house to going to jail to having a son, to join the Navy, being flunked out of college, and, you know, kind of arriving, you know, where I am now. I highlight the relationship with my father because it really goes back to what I was feeling when I was 25, 28, and which is this absence, which is this lack of innate guidance and safety that I felt like I was supposed to be having from that role. And it's not to say that my stepdad was lacking or that, you know, my real dad was supposed to turn around and be this hero later in life. It was just to say I felt it. And I felt it most because I knew how hard I was going to be there for my son. And I think it just reminded me, like, damn, I wish I had this, you know? So in The Missing Piece, you know, I kind of explore some moments where, you know, I realized that maybe I would have to become the person my dad could lean on, and I should stop framing him as somebody who is supposed to be this big wall of support for me, because he is who he is. And I need to accept that I'm a version of him that was able to excel even greater. So
yeah,
The Missing Piece was just kind of that work for me. It just felt like a huge homework assignment in my life, and reframing, you know, the things that maybe were painful, but really just adding some context to it, you know, because I always thought, oh, my dad should have fought for me. But when I was really spending money and hiring a lawyer and having to go into all those court dates, I realized how hard it really is to fight and to come out on the other side with some dignity and some custody, and, you know, some time.
Yeah.
So that softened my heart to him, you know, and many other instances have softened my heart to him. So, I love my dad. I just know that our future will be much greater than our past.
Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from 100%. I actually just had this conversation today with a friend, and they were saying how, you know, it's important, like, you know, for example, if a father wasn't around, it's important to, you know, just kind of accept that person for who they are and understand how you can, you know, change that in yourself and make a better future for yourself and for your child, rather than continuing to harp on it in a negative way and allowing that to, like, just kind of deplete you in a sense, or kind of just stop you from growing. I totally get, you know, where you're coming from with that. And you mentioned before, just kind of taking it back a little bit, you mentioned having a stepfather around, right? So what did that dynamic look like? Was that more so, you know, was he there for you, you know, more so in a father-like way? Did he teach you, you know, a lot of different things? What did you learn from that dynamic?
Well, he's still teaching me things to this day, and I'm very thankful for him. But it was hard to accept him at first, and it was hard to embrace that. I wasn't a kid longing for a father at 7, 8. I was a kid angry. Like, I don't need one. At this point, I'm gonna be these things and blah blah blah, you know, pounding my chest. So things that I respect from him later on in life are his ability to have structure and stability, his ability to be patient in conversation, his ability to write love notes and get cards for no reason for my mom, his ability to put my sister on shoulders that she never got a chance to do before. I just started learning to admire him for, you know, his character. And it took time over the years, and I'm thankful that we have had that time. But, you know, I was internalizing a lot and rejecting, but we had some great moments. He coached some little league teams of mine, as far as, like, basketball goes. He helped teach me how to cut grass. You know, supported me getting my first pair of clippers, which I later, you know, became a barber. He, you know, definitely supported me in his career as a writer, you know, always sharing with his coworkers and just being an advocate for my messages and books. So, you know, I'm really thankful for him and his family, you know, because his father has been a huge supporter. And just the structure, their balance, their love has really, really, really been a great presence in my life, you know, and it's shown me what can happen, you know. Him and all his siblings graduated college. His dad even graduated college. Like, I didn't know guys going to college in the 60s.
Right.
You know? You know, my stepfather, who is my dad, he's extremely accomplished himself. Like, he went to West Point off of a senator's recommendation. Like, I just saw what fatherhood could produce in a man. And his son is a doctor in Tennessee, you know, a pediatric doctor. So it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm naming my son a junior. We got to get in line with whatever y'all been having going on for the last 60, 80 years, because I know about none of that, you know? So, yeah, I just admire so many different things about them as a family. I mean, they take pride in what they do. Kind of brag. I've never heard him brag about anything he's done for me or my sister or my mom and just period. You know, they're just committed to the essence of manhood, which is holding things up, you know, being the foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, man, thanks so much for opening up about that. It's dope to hear and just hear that, you know, clearly, you know, your father, your biological father wasn't there how you wanted him to be, but you were still able to get, you know, that guidance from your stepfather and kind of seeing what, you know, being a father looked like and how that was passed down from generations from his father and all that. So that's super dope. But I got to ask, man, you said he was first to give you clippers and you became a barber. So with it being quarantine, man, you gotta be, you know, keeping a fresh cut and cutting your son up too, right? Are y'all like doing cuts in the house?
Oh yeah, of course, man. We're good. My son's been working on his ways this year, so I've been making sure to keep his line straight, and he's been putting a do-rag on at night. And me, I'm bald, so I'm thankful. I'm shaving, but I keep it clean. I make sure I keep it clean. That really just helps me write better. You know, you gotta. You know, people might dress up when they have like a video chat or something like that.
Oh yeah.
I just edge myself up so I can just feel better, you know. But yeah, I'm definitely
right, yeah.
Definitely keeping it sharp for us.
Yeah,
I'm wondering
cool,
if he's gonna ask me to learn, but he ain't said nothing yet. I think he's nervous. He like, you got it.
for now. Yeah, I'm over here struggling, man. So I'm just curious, but you're right, man. Keeping it kind of that fresh line and keep trimmed up, that definitely makes you feel better about yourself. So I was just curious, man, since that was passed down, you know, to you, I was wondering, you know, were you passing that down to your son? That's dope.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, it's that old saying that I was just thinking of it. You know, when you look good, you feel good. And shout out to everybody to know how to cut their hair, because I'm over here looking like a black Tom Hanks from Castaway, you know, just growing out everything. So shout out to y'all for sure. And, you know, just kind of thinking about just more of those interests and those role models in your life, you gotta tell us, like, real quick, like, who would you say, if you had to choose, like, your favorite or your top TV dads of all time, and why? Who really stood out to you?
Okay, TV dads, let's see. Uncle Phil is like most prominent, probably because they really just did a tribute to him a few days ago. Will Smith put it on his Instagram, but I just loved, I loved how he could be both big, loud, and gentle at the same time. Like, you knew he would throw you out, but you also know he would show up to the pool hall and hold you down. And I just thought that his range was awesome. And I thought that essence of a young black kid being welcome in another man's home and being able to call it home and knowing that it's safe was just something that we all kind of related to in some ways. Not we all, but just many people related to in some ways. Second, Carl Winslow. He was an officer, but it wasn't as much about his life as an officer. It was more about his everyday life and the personification. It was just as a man, you know, welcoming in the neighbor's kid, welcoming in his son's friends, welcoming in his daughter's friends, you know, just being, you know, his wife's sister, just being that stable home that they can come dance, dress, act a fool in, and it still be okay. You know, I just thought their call was awesome. And then let's see, a third TV dad, my wife and kids, Damon Wayans. He was hilarious. He was absolutely hilarious. And he loved his family. He loved his wife. Mm-hmm. He wanted to make her smile and laugh. He wanted to make his daughter feel beautiful. His son was goofy, you know, and he made light of that in hilarious ways. But also his son was able to catch him off guard and just sit him down and be like, I see me in you, you know. And it was just... It was just a great dynamic, and I thought that show was so slept on. So yeah,
man, I agree with you 100%, man. My wife and kids, they play it back to this day, and I watch, and it's like, man, people really sleep on this show. People sleep on Michael Kyle, man. He owned his own business. He was funny. All those things that you said, man. Like he's one of my favorites for sure. Carl Winslow was dope, and then of course, you know, Uncle Phil was pretty cool too. I think if I had to pick three though, I would go Uncle Phil, Michael Kyle. I don't know. I like Carl Winslow, but I'm thinking my third would be trying to think of who my third would be, man. I might just go Pops from the Wayans Brothers too, just because he was funny, man. He got on them and just kind of kept it funny and cool. I might pick him as my third, but Willis. My list, we can't go wrong. They all great TV dads. But, yeah, Michael Kyle, he was definitely slept on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And one of the other dads, and I'll say this in a non-traditional sense, I'm thinking of Jamie Foxx show, Garrett Morris, and his character. You know, when he took them in at the hotel, he was a dope he was a really dope example for Jamie during that show, and you just kind of see how he was able to help guide him somewhat, you know, because if anyone watched a whole bunch of like the Jamie Foxx show, that, you know, he was doing his own thing, but, you know, similar to either uncle or stepdad or whatever, he was pretty there. He was pretty impactful in his life for sure. So
yeah,
I like those lists overall. I can't even argue with y'all. And Rob, you mentioned, you know, earlier you got to start with fatherhood, like around 20 or definitely your earlier 20s. So like for you, like take us back to when you first found out, you know, you was getting ready to be a father, and like, how did you feel about that? And just kind of get into like some of those thoughts and emotions you had at the same time. Cause I feel like, you know, between then and now, you know, I know you're a whole different person. So what was 20-year-old Rob like?
Man, I think the word I used earlier was shook. I was terrified. I was not ready. And I knew I wasn't ready. I didn't even stay anywhere consistently. Barely had a car. And I was like bouncing, you know, between a few jobs. And I wasn't in a set relationship. So I just had so many fears. And I just thought like, man, if I have a kid right now, I'm probably going to stink it up, you know? And I always told myself that I was not going to stink it up as a father. So fast forward throughout the months, I think I did pretty well as a support team for my child's mother when she was pregnant. Her name is Sequoia. And she actually lived with my family throughout her pregnancy. With my mom and my mom's house throughout her pregnancy. And my son was born in January. And I remember looking into his eyes. She had a cesarean C-section. So she was out cold after he kind of was pulled out. And I remember watching him through the glass as they cut his umbilical cord. And I remember, you know, the doctor putting him in my arms. And my son's always been keen on eye contact. He's going to look in your eyes. And he did it. And I just felt like he could see right through me, man. I felt like he can see all my mistakes and my shame and all these different things. And there was still a feeling that he loved me and that he knew my voice, because he wasn't crying. He was just looking at me like, oh, that's you who's been talking to me? All right. What are we about to do? You know, and it was
right.
It was just different comfort. And I joined the Navy in April of 2008, the year he was born. So about 4 months later, I left for boot camp. And then I was in A school, and then I came back, and it was just having to reintroduce myself. it was a little painful, you know, because you want your boy to feel you, to know you. And I think, you know, during that time, I just decided that, you know, nothing was going to hold me back from being everything I thought I could be as a father. And while I was in boot camp A school, I read the most important book that I probably ever read on fatherhood, which is, you know, what led me to this story. It's called The Principles of Fatherhood by Miles Monroe. He's a pastor from the Bahamas, and he has done some extremely impactful things for islands and people of color. And his legacy, you know, it speaks for itself. But that book taught me some key things about fatherhood and how we should approach the journey. So I always recommend that to other fathers. But yeah, I was shook, man. I was shook. I just had to get it together little by little, like we all do.
Right. Like, literally take it day by day. And granted, you know, I was, let's see, when I had mine, granted, my first one, she was our honeymoon baby. So she's always our little Belize baby, but I was 26 and my wife was 27. And it's like, I try to tell people, you know, aside from like whatever age, you know, you have kids or want to start or adopt or whatever the case may be, you know, you're always going to get that feeling of like shookness, like, okay, is this thing real? Like, we really about to do this? Like, I'm about to be a whole parent? What? You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, we literally got to take it day by day by day. I always tell people, you know, it's no real way to, in a sense, prepare to be a parent. Because when folks out here be reading books about parenting and what to expect, and then the kid gets here and it's a complete opposite, now you're looking a little silly sometimes because you've kind of built your expectations or created this picture based off of a book or an author or whoever the case may be. And then the kid comes out and they just throw you a curveball. So it's always amazing to not only hear your situation, but just other folks who got started earlier in life. And I got to throw this in, you know, shout out to all the parents that are also in the military or veterans, because, you know, just with the lifestyle that comes with that, with like traveling and, you know, being gone sometimes years at a time and still able to, you know, be as involved as possible. You know, I guess you can only, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know, I guess you can only do so many Zoom calls from Afghanistan or the Mid East or whatever, but, you know, just that extra little oomph of being like, you know what, I know I'm far away. I might be on the other side of the world, but I want to make sure that my kid doesn't forget who I am, especially in the beginning stages after they get here as little babies. So just shout out to you on that.
Yeah, no, thank you. And shout out to, you know, the armed forces who provided different services on the ship, who were, if we wanted to go sit down, you know, once a week, we can go sit down, and they provided these children's books. And we could record ourselves reading a book to our kids, and I would mail those home, you know, throughout the deployments. And that was just a great service to help us kind of stay close, you know. But there's going to be those periods of reintegration, and I'll talk about that in The Missing Piece, where it's just not smooth, you know, and you need to submit. And, hey, I've been gone. I've been the person that was plugged out of this equation, and I need to be thankful that I had people who can hold themselves down in my absence. Now I need to reintegrate at a way and a pace that's best for the group and not based off of some macho ideas I have of, you know, everything stops for me, you know?
Right. No, I hear you on that. And just kind of thinking about even just what we like talked about and covered so far, you know, you've done a whole lot so far. And I know you got so much more to go and really the best is yet to come. But like, how do you, just in terms of like self-care, you know, how do you kind of like juggle and manage everything? Because I was telling somebody this real quick, and it kind of like just shook me even when I thought about it. But I was like, somebody, you know, asked me, how do I do it all? Because I tell folks, you know, I'm a husband, I'm a father of one, not just one, but two. You know, I have my 9-to-5 and I do and host a couple of podcasts, and folks be like, damn, how do you do all that? And I'd be like, I don't know. I just do it and pray that I don't have a breakdown in between. But no, seriously, like, how do you, what are some of your best practices of how you manage everything?
I like to listen to my body, as cliche as that sounds, man. I know when I'm pushing myself. I know when I'm tired. And I also know when I feel like I'm lagging behind and I'm not putting forth my best effort. And I think that it's good to just see every day as a different one. And I try to practice this exercise every morning, which is repeat the phrase, I can do it now, 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 do it now. And I repeat it 10 times. And that helps me get up and try to just start my day with motion, whether it's getting a workout or maybe I need to be reading, maybe I need to be writing. And then beyond that, you know, which is reading, writing, those are important elements of my self-care, working out, those are important elements of my self-care too. But when I revisit, you know, just listening to my body, another aspect is listening to my spirit. You know, there is an energy surgeon in me that encourages me to maybe call and check in on some people. You know, hey, if you're feeling down, maybe you should be calling and serving and listening to somebody and providing some insight or some encouragement. You know, maybe it'll lead me to go on a walk and connect with nature. It's just important to know that I'm not always supposed to be knowing what I have to do or what's next or whatever. Yeah. I'm supposed to be being present, you know, and I'm supposed to be being thankful, and I'm also supposed to be being available. And I think that I'm just learning to do those well and emphasizing, you know, the value of stillness, right? Just emphasizing that to myself, you know, just because you're tasked with being still does not mean do nothing.
No, it makes so much sense. I get it 100%. I feel like this whole conversation, man, you dropped so many gems and gave so much insight about, you know, a lot of different things, from who you are as a father, your career, your relationship with your father, and even the impact that your stepfather had on you, which I feel like is super, super dope just to hear about, and how it impacted you in your life, which is really cool. And even also talking about just who you were at age 20, you know, becoming a father, and how you were scared and, you know, not knowing, you know, what that process looked like, and just getting better day by day. And, you know, you're 12 years into fatherhood now. So I'm pretty sure at this point, you know, if you could, you know, give some advice to people on their fatherhood journey, like, you know, what advice would you give them?
So, my advice for other fathers, and I say the word advice lightly, but, you know, my suggestions for other fathers is to take pride in your effort, to see the support you give your family, to see the listening that you do with your loved ones, to see the service that you can kind of give to them as something that's also building you up too. And to be comfortable with moments of criticism, be comfortable with moments of maybe not even some of the most appreciated, because ultimately you are going to get what's due to you, and that is the love, the value, the support, and the grace that you need to become the man and father that you are meant to blossom into. And don't let any negative talk, whether that be self-talk or whether that be people in your environment, seep so low into your spirit that you stop thinking that you can affect change on your life, on your situation, that you have to give up. Because ultimately, this commitment as a father is lifelong. It doesn't expire at 18. We are adults much longer than we are adolescents. And it's important to know that the relationship that you build with your kid can last as long as you breathe, as long as you stay committed to it. And let no barrier, no person, no system come in the middle of that, you know? Everything's going to fall at your will when it comes to sticking close to what you love.
Yeah, I think that's incredible and solid advice. I mean, I like how you put advice in quotes, because it's never a one size fit all. And essentially, we gotta do and advise and really just help and mentor like fathers that are coming behind us. So I appreciate that. And just to kind of piggyback on that, you know, not just talking about advice for new fathers, but you know, earlier we were talking about your own relationship with your pops, and if you had to write a letter or say a letter to your father, starting with "Dear Father," what would you say, and how would that go?
I would say, "Dear Father," I have my biological dad in mind, and I would say, "Dear Father, thank you for joining me on this journey. You may not know it, but I picked you, and I'm proud of my decision. I have valued the lessons we've learned, whether you were present or figuratively absent. I still have always felt you, and I love you. And I know that there are some great times ahead of us. So thank you, Dad.
I like it, man. That's good. Now, you know, being that your stepfather, you know, was in your life too, you know, if you could also write a letter to him, you know, what would you say to him as well?
I would say, "Dear Dad," started the same way. "Dear Dad, I love you. I appreciate so many qualities about you. And I am thankful that you didn't cheat me out of time. I'm thankful that you were always somebody who chose to do instead of talk. And for that, I have a bank of memories and examples that I lean on as I try to stand upright in my own self. So I appreciate you, man. Thank you."
Dang, Jesse hit him with the two letters. All right.
The latest episode.
It's all love. It's all love for real. I'm not who I am without the influence of those two men. So I'm thankful.
Oh, nah, that makes sense for sure. Just giving you a hard time, but you know, we talked about a lot during this episode for sure. And what's next for you? You know, what can we expect from you? You know, going forward.
Well, thank you so much for just even inviting me to the conversation, both Jesse and Matthew. I really appreciate the platform and all you all are doing. But when we talk in terms of what's next for Rob Hill Sr., I am thinking, you know, equity. I'm blessed to own, you know, the rights and publishing to my books. And I would like to amplify this company and this platform that I have to another level by releasing some books with, you know, some other authors, doing some collaborative projects with some people who would like to get books done. The world of independent publishing, aka self-publishing, is not dwindling. It is actually predicted to grow by over $20 billion in the next 2 years. So I would like to create my form of the Black Simon & Schuster, basically, which is a conglomerate that is focused on telling stories and and amplifying messengers, those who can, you know, just help us grow, whether it's historians, whether it's teachers, whether it's band instructors, whether it's athletes, whether it's artists, entertainers. There is a book in everyone, and I think understanding the art of how to produce one is important, because we all can leave some very valuable gems behind. So I just want to get better as a publisher over these next few years.
Before we go, I will and I do have to ask you, you know, how can people connect with you? Where can they find you at? You know, what are your socials?
So on social media, you can follow me at Rob Hill Senior.
I got you. I love it. No, I appreciate you coming on. This has been a most impactful and definitely another dope conversation. I try to tell people in the beginning what they're getting ready to hear. So I'm glad that you know, we not only was able to live up to it, but just really continuing to give that advice in the gyms and just really being able to help everyone out through this conversation, through providing this safe place that we can have these conversations, regardless if it's yourself or any of the guests. You know, we're always so grateful that you all can, just for a moment, maybe an hour, hour and a half, just for that time to be a little bit more open and be vulnerable. So thank you for your support, and thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem, man. Thank you again for the platform. Thank you for the invite, and thank you for listening. You know, I definitely hope that I left the audience with some memorables.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Dear Fathers Podcast. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to our show on the platform of your choice. Follow us on Instagram at dear.fathers and check out our website, dearfathers.com, for more content. This is Matthew Kirby, and I'm signing out. Now let's get back to the fatherhood journey. Peace.
Real. Time is money, and I'm working on that richer meal. It's up to me to drop the ball like I'm center field. I gotta touch lead better when I'm in the clip. I be in and out the cut like I'm Emmitt Smith.